Have you ever stared at a blank page, feeling that peculiar mix of dread and inadequacy that seems to afflict all writers? Ayn Rand would have you know that this anxiety stems from a fundamental misconception about writing itself. Writing is no more difficult a skill than any other, such as engineering, she asserts with characteristic directness. Like every human activity, it requires practice and knowledge. There is nothing mystical to it. This refreshingly pragmatic approach forms the foundation of her guide to nonfiction writing, a book that has influenced countless writers from tech entrepreneurs like Peter Thiel to political commentators like Christopher Hitchens. What sets Rand's methodology apart is her rejection of the romantic notion that good writing emerges from some ineffable talent or divine inspiration. Instead, she offers something far more valuable, a systematic framework that transforms writing from an anxiety-inducing mystery into a definable, doable activity governed by rational principles. The first step in writing anything worthwhile is understanding exactly what you're trying to accomplish. Rand distinguishes between two essential elements: subject, what the article is about, and theme, what you want to say about it. This distinction might seem obvious, but many writers fail precisely because they conflate the two or leave one undefined. When selecting a subject, you must accept that you cannot cover an entire field comprehensively in a single piece. Articles must treat a severely delimited aspect of a subject. The fantasy of writing the unanswerable article that covers every possible objection is just that. A fantasy that assumes readers lack free will and that you must present an irresistible case. Your theme must be commensurate with your subject, neither too narrow nor too broad. Most importantly, you must have something new to say. New doesn't necessarily mean unprecedented philosophical principles. It could simply be applying established ideas to different concrete situations in an original way. Before writing a single word, Rand insists you answer three questions clearly. What do I want to write about? What do I want to say about it? And what is the element of novelty in my theme? Once you've selected your subject and theme, consider why others should care about your article. This adds objectivity to your selection process and forces you to think about your audience. While audiences vary widely, you must identify the general category of reader you're addressing. Your primary consideration should be your reader's knowledge level, as this determines how much explanation is necessary. Rand offers a counterintuitive but powerful piece of advice. Address yourself to the best minds in your audience. Don't try accommodating irrational thinking or poor epistemology. Assume full rationality and write as if convincing yourself at your most perceptive and focused. This isn't subjectivity, but strict objectivity. Imagine yourself as a reader who doesn't know the subject but is capable of understanding it. Many writers, particularly those with strong philosophical convictions, make the mistake of believing articles should preach philosophy. Rand identifies this as stemming from a deeper misunderstanding about the nature of abstractions. Philosophy isn't a separate entity floating above everyday life. It studies reality's fundamentals, principles that manifest in countless concrete situations, from business decisions to personal relationships to political events. Abstractions don't exist apart from concretes, Rand explains. They're how we organize entities to understand them. Being truly Aristotelian means recognizing only concrete events, relationships, and problems exist. Abstract problems like man versus the state occur in particular situations with specific people and governments, not in some Platonic dimension. For example, government overreach isn't just a theoretical concept, but manifests in specific regulations, taxes, or restrictions that affect real businesses and individuals. When writing middle-range articles, those applying abstractions to concretes, ask what you think about the subject, not how to insert philosophical bromides. Don't smuggle in propaganda between the lines. This creates chaos and undermines credibility. Let your philosophy naturally inform your material as an implicit framework, the way a building's foundation supports its structure without being visible. An objectivist writing about modern art wouldn't prove reason is good, but would apply relevant philosophical aspects while focusing on the actual subject, perhaps analyzing specific works through the lens of objective aesthetic standards. Rand demonstrates this principle by analyzing James Reston's article on campus unrest. Reston's pragmatist philosophy permeates his writing without explicit statements. He avoids moral judgments about violence, treats thinking as a response to problems rather than a normal function, and relies on emotions as primaries. His approach reflects pragmatism's core tenets, the rejection of absolute principles and the emphasis on immediate practical consequences over fundamental truths. By contrast, Rand would approach the same subject by identifying the initiation of force as the primary issue and emphasizing the need for principles rather than pragmatic reactions. She would examine specific incidents of campus violence, their causes and consequences, while implicitly applying her philosophical framework about individual rights and rational discourse. A proper middle-range article evaluates events from your philosophical viewpoint without explicitly preaching it, allowing readers to grasp the practical implications of philosophical principles through concrete examples and clear analysis. This integration requires skill and subtlety, the ability to let philosophical principles guide your analysis without turning every article into a philosophical treatise. Writers must trust that their fundamental beliefs will naturally shape their perspective on concrete issues, just as one's understanding of physics shapes how one explains a bridge's construction without needing to quote Newton's laws. The outline functions as a blueprint for your writing. When creating one, focus on what readers need to know to agree with your conclusion, selecting only essential points while considering your subject's context. Be mindful of your article's scale. Beginners typically try covering too much. Set approximate length parameters to guide what details to include or omit. Your theme serves as the standard for inclusion decisions. When tempted by interesting sidelines, ask if they're necessary to demonstrate your theme. The logical order should follow causal connections among your arguments, observing which points depend on which others. Rand warns against two common errors in outlining. The first is the Platonic approach, believing there exists only one possible logical order for presenting ideas. While an article follows a broad pattern similar to a geometric theorem, any worthwhile subject contains many details requiring choices about presentation. The second error is the concrete-bound approach, seeing articles as series of separate points without cohesive integration. This nearsighted approach loses sight of the article as a whole, making the theme unclear. Outlines should be neither too sparse nor too detailed. If a point feels difficult to formulate, add more detail. If you're bored writing extensive notes on simple points, you're being too detailed. Work in layers. Start with a brief outline, then elaborate on certain points. The goal is clarity and organization, not exhaustive detail. Write in grammatical sentences rather than headlines, being specific enough for your own guidance without writing a first draft. When writing a draft, Rand emphasizes a counterintuitive truth. The subconscious must take the lead while the conscious mind provides direction. No one can write through a fully conscious process. Attempting to consciously select every word would be paralyzing. Instead, writers must trust their automatized subconscious integrations just as we do when speaking. The outline sets direction for the subconscious, but the actual expression must flow automatically without self-censorship or editing during the writing process. Rand insists writers must adopt the premise, "My subconscious, right or wrong," during drafting. The subconscious isn't an independent entity, but functions like a computer that follows conscious orders within its knowledge limits. It responds precisely to whatever concern dominates your focus. If you worry about reader reception or your self-esteem, you'll become paralyzed. While writing, Rand advises adopting complete self-confidence, setting aside all self-doubt until editing. Yet every writer encounters what Rand calls the squirms, a paralyzing mental state where your subconscious stops functioning, producing flat, wooden prose. The primary cause is subconscious contradiction. Your conscious outline might seem clear, but multiple unexplored possibilities create uncertainty. Other causes include insufficient knowledge or indecisive thinking. The only solution is to work through it consciously. Taking breaks prolongs the agony. Though it feels like accomplishing nothing, each failed attempt helps untangle mental knots until suddenly the right integration emerges like a revelation. Distinct from authentic squirms is what Rand calls the white tennis shoes syndrome, the universal procrastination writers face before beginning work. This reluctance stems not from moral weakness, but from the psychoepistemological difficulty of making the mental switch into intense concentration. Like a blast furnace requiring tremendous energy to heat, a writer must overcome enormous resistance to enter the writing state. Yet once there, you become so absorbed you'd resent interruptions. The solution requires sheer willpower to stop procrastinating and begin. A cardinal writing error is attempting to edit sentences before they exist on paper. Until written, a sentence remains only a potential, like an embryo before birth. Writers often torture themselves by interrupting the crucial thought-to-words process with premature editing. Some even write a sentence painfully, then consult a thesaurus for every word. This misunderstands the contextual nature of writing. You cannot judge a sentence in isolation. Therefore, you cannot fully judge any sentence until completing the entire article or chapter. Let sentences be born before deciding if they need revision. Editing differs fundamentally from writing in three ways. First, while writing relies on the subconscious with minimal conscious interference, editing requires conscious dominance and analytical thinking. Second, writing must be personal and emotional, drawing from deep within, while editing demands objectivity, reading your work as if someone else wrote it, maintaining emotional distance. Third, writing requires suspending doubt to maintain creative flow, while editing means questioning everything methodically, though not raising unwarranted doubts that could paralyze progress. Effective editing happens in layers, with each reading focusing on different aspects, much like peeling an onion. The first reading examines structure, logical progression, unnecessary repetitions, and overall balance between sections. Here, you're looking at the forest, not individual trees. Does your argument flow naturally? Are your transitions smooth? The second reading addresses clarity of thought and content, ensuring your words accurately express your meaning without ambiguity. This is where you scrutinize your logic, evidence, and supporting details. Only in the third reading should you focus on style and polish, word choice, sentence rhythm, and rhetorical devices. This layered approach respects the mind's limitations. You cannot evaluate everything simultaneously without diminishing the quality of your analysis. Rand emphasizes grammar as having the same purpose as concepts. It provides rules for using concepts precisely and consistently. The rules of grammar organize our concepts to communicate specific, unequivocal meanings, serving as the foundation for clear thinking. Without grammar, we could have words but not sentences, remaining at the primitive me Tarzan, you Jane level of expression. Though memorizing grammatical rules may seem dull or mechanical, their importance cannot be overstated. They are essential to thinking and writing precisely, much like mathematical rules are essential to solving equations. When editing, analyze sentences methodically for subject-verb agreement and potential multiple meanings. Pay special attention to modifiers, ensuring they're properly placed and clearly connected to what they modify. Punctuation is crucial for clarity in English, often completely changing meaning. Errors like, "My opponent has had 8 years at the public trough, now give me a chance," versus, "My opponent has had 8 years at the public trough, now give me a chance," demonstrate how easily meaning can be distorted by punctuation alone. When clarity conflicts with style, Always prioritize clarity. Aim for primer-like precision over metaphorical flourish. Remember that even the most beautiful prose fails if it doesn't effectively communicate its intended meaning. Consider maintaining a personal style guide for consistency in formatting, capitalization, and technical terms. Keep reference materials nearby. A good dictionary, style manual, and grammar guide can resolve many editing dilemmas. Finally, remember that good editing often means knowing when to stop. Perfectionism can be as damaging as carelessness. Style is a distinctive, characteristic mode of execution that encompasses everything pertaining to the form in which ideas are presented. It cannot be consciously manufactured, but must emerge from subconscious integration. Like emotions, style cannot be directly controlled, but can be influenced indirectly. Rand offers this counterintuitive advice. The first rule about style is to forget it. Let it come naturally through practice. Focus only on expressing your ideas clearly. Eventually, you'll notice you're writing in your own style. When writing, concentrate exclusively on your subject and clarity of presentation. In every aspect of style, your subject and theme must be the absolute standard. They should determine not just content and details, but also your word and sentence choices. Don't think about how beautiful your words are, how people will react, or what your writing proves about you. Think exclusively about what you want to say. The more you focus on your subject, the better you'll write at your current development stage. While nonfiction primarily presents abstract principles, you must remember that only concretes exist. Abstractions merely classify concretes. Therefore, you must tie your abstractions to reality through illustrations and examples, particularly when presenting new theories. Beyond this basic concretization, style involves more complex elements, color, metaphors, and unusual verbal techniques that integrate your subject in the reader's mind. For word choice, clarity and precision are the only absolutes. While denotation, exact meaning, ensures clarity, connotations create emotional appeal. Words like slender versus lanky both describe thinness, but with entirely different connotations. Watch for philosophical implications in your word choices and be aware of culturally corrupted words. Metaphors compare one thing to another to manipulate the reader's consciousness. When you say, "the snow was white as sugar," you make the reader hold two concrete images simultaneously, seeing what they have in common. This reconstructs the process of concept formation in the reader's mind, concretizing attributes and making them real. Transitions are often misunderstood and frequently overused. They aren't needed between every paragraph, only when switching to a different aspect of your subject whose connection isn't immediately clear. Logic is the natural link between sentences, paragraphs, and chapters. If your progression is clear and logical, trust your reader's power of integration. For instance, when moving from discussing the causes of climate change to its effects, you might not need a transition if the relationship is self-evident. However, when shifting from climate science to economic policy solutions, a transition helps bridge the conceptual gap. When necessary transitions are required, make them open and simple in nonfiction. Now, let us consider the economics of a mixed economy. Or, having examined the historical context, we can turn to modern applications. Avoid unnecessary recapitulations that confuse readers with phrases like, "as we have seen in the previous section," or "to reiterate what was discussed." Sometimes, sentence structure itself can provide transitions, creating verbal bridges that make for smoother reading. For example, using parallel construction or ending one paragraph with a term that begins the next can create natural flow without explicit transitional phrases. When a sentence feels awkward but you can't determine why, examine your emphasis. The arrangement of words in English allows you to place emphasis where you want it, fundamentally changing the meaning. For example, "because you smiled at me, I was happy all day," emphasizes that happiness came from the smile, while I was happy all day because you smiled at me, emphasizes the happiness itself. Consider also, reluctantly she agreed to the proposal, versus she agreed to the proposal reluctantly. The placement of reluctantly shifts the emotional weight of the sentence. Among grammatically permissible alternatives, choose the one that carries your exact emphasis. Rhythm in prose is a tricky area best left alone, especially for beginning writers. Unlike poetry, where rhythm is formalized through meters and feet, prose rhythm involves complex neurological and psychological factors related to how sounds register in our brain. The cadence of prose depends on sentence length variation, stress patterns, and sound combinations that we process unconsciously. Currently, we lack an objective vocabulary to define precisely what makes a sentence rhythmical, though we instinctively recognize when it works. Rather than consciously pursuing good rhythm, let it develop naturally through your writing voice. If forced to choose between rhythm and clarity, always sacrifice rhythm. Some writers achieve natural rhythm by reading their work aloud, letting their ear guide them rather than following prescribed rules about sentence patterns or word choices. Book reviewing serves two purposes: reporting on and evaluating publications. When reviewing a book, don't give a full synopsis. Indicate its nature without recapitulating it entirely. Always state the author's general theme and be skillful enough to isolate and present only the essentials, the highlights and key points of the author's development. Include representative quotations that demonstrate both the author's approach and writing style. These serve two purposes: giving readers first-hand exposure to the author and providing objective evidence of your reliability as a reviewer. Your selection carries weight by implication. Readers will assume quoted passages are representative and fair. Indicate what is good or informative about the book, what readers will learn from it. Briefly indicate the book's philosophical and stylistic flaws, especially important for nonfiction books with mixed premises. Express your opinion, but keep your estimate separate from your report. Writing a book applies the same principles as article writing, but on a larger scale. What constitutes a section in an article might be a chapter in a book. A paragraph might expand to a sequence. The key difference is scale, not fundamentals. For books, outlines are absolutely essential. No nonfiction book can be written inspirationally. Create a general outline for the whole book, then detailed outlines for each chapter. Integration is crucial. Each chapter must connect not just to the preceding chapter, but to the book as a whole, which requires holding the entire structure in mind. Until a book is finished, consider early chapters provisional. Your outline is the only absolute while writing, but countless options exist for presenting concrete material. Be willing to cut even well-written passages that don't serve the whole, as Rand did when cutting the character Vesta Dunning from The Fountainhead. To condition yourself to generate ideas for writing, you must first avoid what Rand calls the great enemy of mental activity, repression. Self-doubt may be appropriate in psychological thinking, but not when stimulating your mind for writing. Trust your subconscious and let your mind freely wander and judge without artificial constraints. To write interesting articles, you must have something to say, a theme that comes from premises broader than your immediate subject. These premises emerge from your philosophical convictions. You get ideas according to standing orders established in your mind. You need to be an intellectual detective, examining statements by working forward to implications and backward to premises. Your profession offers the most fertile ground for writing ideas. When disgusted with your profession, don't merely note its terrible state. Identify what makes you indignant conceptually. Of course, acknowledge anything good you find. This makes for better themes, because such occasions are rare today. The desire for ever deeper professional understanding is a standing order you must maintain throughout life. To be creative and not merely a hack, to stay young regardless of age, and become a real personality, you need the same premise necessary for generating writing ideas. never think you know enough. This doesn't mean doubting your knowledge, but enlarging it. When selecting a title, focus 90% on appropriateness, 5% on clarity, and if possible, 5% on drama or intrigue. Your title should grow organically from an integration of your material and apply to its essence. Most titles emerge inspirationally rather than through conscious calculation. A title should match your subject's tone. Serious topics shouldn't have humorous titles unless used for bitter effect. Above all, titles must not mislead readers about content. When choosing between options, trust what feels right. This reflects your sense of life and will likely be consistent with your writing style. The final lesson Rand offers is perhaps the most important. You must think on your own. When facing new problems without guidance, approach them abstractly through principles. Never assume that leads from others must be followed literally or that concretes are absolutes. Always step back intellectually and identify the applicable abstractions. This principle is illustrated by Rand's revealing anecdote from her screenwriting career. When she began at Warner Brothers, she requested a sample script to learn the technical terminology. By examining it, she figured out what terms like close-up and fade-out meant conceptually. Years later, she encountered a screenwriter who had also requested a sample script but followed it literally, placing close-ups and long shots exactly where they appeared in his sample, regardless of his story's needs. This concrete-bound conformity resembles the error classicists made in literature, reducing Greek tragedies to rigid formulas. The essential mistake is relying on others' understanding rather than developing your own. Never be a ritualist following samples dogmatically on blind faith. Understand the abstract principles behind the concrete examples. The psychoepistemological point to remember is that you must think on your own. This is the only way to learn and maintain independence, and ultimately, to write anything worth reading. As Rand demonstrates throughout her guide, good writing isn't mystical or magical. It's the product of a mind that integrates abstract principles with concrete reality, that balances conscious direction with subconscious flow, and that never stops seeking deeper understanding of both its subject and its craft.